Well, I want to thank everyone for attending the meeting. And before we go, the preamble I'm just going to read is that the meeting is being recorded. In the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or email advising whether the meeting is adjourned or canceled or the time of the meeting resumption. I'm going to take roll call. Please indicate that you're here by saying aye. Peter Lisi.
Present, aye.
Hi. Present is good. Lawrence Davis, present. Steve Elbaum.
Here.
Great. Susan Martin.
Here.
Susan, I saw you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
I have it on mute.
Okay. And we have also joining us, but it's not a is a board member, but not a committee member, is Michael Angelini.
Thank you.
Individuals must state their names and titles before speaking during the meeting, and votes must be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. The first item on the agenda is, first and foremost, I wanted to say that I wanted to thank all of the board members that did come out and visit the two organizations that we saw, All Our Kin and Freedom Read. I thought that that was an exceptional a trip, very informative and wonderful. And I want to thank Betty and Chief and everyone that worked on that as well. So the first item of agenda is the November 23, 2023 Grant Committee minutes. I hope everyone had an opportunity to take a look at that. And I'm going to ask for a call to accept the minutes, to vote to accept the minutes.
Peter Lisi, I move to accept the minutes from November 23rd or November 8th.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Is it November 8th? Yeah,
yep.
November 8th.
November
That's
8th.
correct. Thank
I'll
you, Peter.
second that motion.
Thank you, Steve. Are there any questions, comments about the minutes? Any changes? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you so much. So this meeting is going to continue what has been the discussion on enterprise capital, and we have joining us is going to be Andrea Levere and Alexandra Sting, and they're going to give us a presentation on enterprise capital. Betty, do you want to just add anything to this before we have Andrea and Alexandra speak?
No, we're good and looking forward to hearing from Andrea and Alexandra.
Well, thank you so much. So I'm going to turn this over to Andrea and Alexandra. Thank you.
Hey, Lawrence, this is Peter. Can I just ask a quick question?
Sure, Peter.
I during the roll call for the meeting, I know that Alan is traveling. He's not on. Is Kimberly on the call? Kim Kennison?
Kimberly is sick. No.
Okay.
She's sick.
All right. I just
thank
want
you.
To make sure. Okay. Thanks.
Great. Well, I'm thrilled to be back with this whole group and once again, salute your pioneering role in bringing this practice to Connecticut. And I'm going to hand it over to my colleague, Alexandra Singh, who has done the financial analysis, joined the site visits, which were terrific, and prepared the presentation. And I will jump in as necessary. So, Alexandra, take it away.
All right. Thank you, Andrea. And nice to see some familiar faces and to meet some new faces. All right. Let's go to the first slide. Okay. So I know that a lot of you have seen some version of this content before. So we're just going to do a brief overview as a way to frame the conversation about the two grants that are being considered today. So as a refresher, enterprise capital plays the same role for nonprofits that equity plays for for-profit enterprises. It is long-term, unrestricted funding that enhances the balance sheet and thereby helps an organization create financial sustainability. All organizations, regardless of tax status and regardless of their business model, require two types of funding. They require revenue and capital. In a nonprofit context, Revenue is what you get through general operating support. That is funding that covers your 12-month financial obligations. So that could include programs and operations. Enterprise capital, you can think of in a for-profit context, is the same thing as retained earnings. That is funding that is available to be invested, or is funding that can be held on the balance sheet to mitigate risk. There's different uses that we see for enterprise capital in a nonprofit context, and we've listed a few examples here. What I would say for the two organizations under consideration today is that the use cases are similar, but there are distinctions. All Our Kin has been around for several years. They have an established track record. They're beyond the launch phase. That said, for All Our Kin to scale, their main asset is people and the systems that are necessary to manage those people internally and to manage a growing external stakeholder base. For an organization like Freedom Reads, they have more of a manufacturing model. So scale for an organization like Freedom Reads comes in the form of investing in fixed assets as well as people. But both organizations do have track records, even if they're in different time periods. So what enterprise capital could do is help them continue to scale and stabilize over time. The last point that I want to make about enterprise capital is that this is not just a conversation about the type of funding that is being provided to these organizations, but it's a reimagining of the relationship between a funder and a grantee. Enterprise capital specifically seeks to address the racial wealth divide that we know exists in the nonprofit sector. It's not hypothetical. We know that it exists just as it exists at the household level. Throughout history, and even to this day, funders have disproportionately funded white-led organizations. And where they have provided funding to organizations led by people of color, that funding has often come with unnecessary and counterproductive restrictions. And that's not what we're trying to do today. Next slide, please. So, why does all this matter? Enterprise capital directly helps organizations pursue their mission without incurring the operating risk of reverse engineering. That might be a term that you're not familiar with. So, to give you some context, reverse engineering is what happens when an organization is forced to adapt its business model based on the funding that funders are willing to provide, rather than the opposite case where funders do their work to understand the operating model of an organization and then structure their funding in a way that actually aligns with the needs of that organization. In other words, it helps organizations match their sources and uses of funds. So, again, as discussed in the previous slide, short-term revenue or general operating support helps organizations meet their 12-month financial obligations. Enterprise capital is complementary in that it gives organizations the funds available to invest in innovation, in people, in fixed assets, or it can be retained on the balance sheet to mitigate risk. Or in some cases, it can be used to leverage additional financing. So I'll give you two examples for that. One is there are a lot of funders that will wait on the sidelines, even if they have a genuine interest in supporting an organization. They won't get involved until they see other funders step up and make a commitment. So enterprise capital can catalyze additional funding from those investors that are waiting on a partner to step up. The second example might be counterintuitive. A lot of nonprofits actually need a debt solution in their capital stack. For example, high growth, scalable nonprofit institutions often see a mismatch between accounts receivable and accounts payable. And that is also true for for-profit companies. For a for-profit company, an elegant solution might be to open a line of credit with a bank. For a nonprofit organization, many do not have the net assets available to back debt. They can get a third-party guarantee, but that is extremely rare. So enterprise capital can help them secure debt. That helps them manage their cash flow over short-term periods. And finally, enterprise capital helps create an alignment of interest between funders and grantees. And I think this is really a critical point here because, again, we're reimagining the type of relationship and the norms that guide the the human connection between a funder and a nonprofit leader. We're trying to shift the mindset from one of scarcity and survival to a mindset of opportunity and possibility. And we're trying to enable nonprofit leaders to reallocate their time between courting investors and chasing dollars, and the time that they should be in community and service to their missions with the people that they are trying to impact. And the final point that I would make is that often the relationship between a funder and a grantee takes a tone of skepticism and distrust, and it goes both ways. With Enterprise Capital, we're trying to foster a tone of confidence, mutual accountability, and genuine partnership, and a sense of care and protection. Next slide. Not every nonprofit is ready for Enterprise Capital, just as not every for-profit organization is ready for growth equity. We look for 9 different characteristics, but we don't require that all 9 characteristics be present. It takes many organizations several years before they achieve mission clarity or develop a strategic plan. There might be a stated mission, but that mission and how it manifests is quite vague. And it can take years for organizations to develop a track record and build out funding networks that can sustain the organization over a long period. Most of the organizations that we come across do not have full-time in-house CFOs. Many do not have audited financials or internal management tools to review their financial position on a regular basis. Allarkin and Freedom Reads check all 9 boxes, and that should give you immense comfort because that is very rare. Next slide. We can keep going. So I'm probably going to skip over a few of these slides because this is more about how you build and integrate an enterprise capital program into your existing funding practices. Again, we're trying to simplify here. We're not underwriting for a financial return. We're underwriting for a social impact return. And that is a different question. Next slide. We believe in aligning capacity building and technical assistance. For those who aren't familiar with the concept, this would be maybe assistance with professional development, developing a strategic plan, or additional financial management capacity, such as building a financial model that can be used by nonprofit leaders to project future cash flow and to anticipate their funding needs over a multi-year period. That level of engagement is to be determined depending on the outcome of this meeting, but those are services that we're already considering. Next slide. Again, monitoring and reporting, I'll be brief. We're not suggesting that CHIFA needs to do a lot of additional work. There are specific financial ratios that we want to monitor, and we think that doing so on a quarterly basis is best practice. But in terms of impact metrics, you're already doing that, and you're already engaging with management teams on a quarterly basis. So we're not suggesting that this is a heavier lift than what you're already doing. Next slide. I will wrap up this part of the presentation with just naming a few risks that might have come up. Again, the question today is more about what is the expectation for the social impact return? And that, in my mind, comes down to a question of, do we trust the integrity and the ability of management teams to deliver on what they say they're going to do? To inform our intuition on that, we can look at their track record, we can do references, and we can review the detailed uses of funds that they have provided. Many organizations that we come across do not provide that level of detail. I know that there are some questions about investment size, and that is, you know, we'll table that discussion until we get into the specific organizations. What I would preface that conversation with is that these organizations have very different business models. An organization like Allarkin scales throughout the state of Connecticut through people. They're expanding their accreditation services and they're expanding their business training. That happens through people and the infrastructure that is necessary to manage people. For an organization like Freedom Reads, they are trying to scale into 94 correctional facilities across the state of Connecticut alone. They understand that the economics for each library that they construct costs $25,000 per library. So the quick math on $25,000 per library across 94 correctional facilities is substantial. And then if you think about scaling across 50 states, that is a lot of funding that they're going to have to secure over a long period of time. But that is their ambition, and they're the only organization that is dedicated to building libraries and providing access to books for incarcerated individuals. We're talking about long-term funding, and I know that both organizations have strong reputations and therefore have investors in their pipeline, many of whom are renowned. Having worked for an organization that specialized in saving nonprofits and for-profit social enterprises from collapse due to funders reneging on their promises, I can say that until a commitment is actually signed into a grant agreement, the funding isn't, it should not be considered a hard commitment. CHIPA making an enterprise capital investment into these organizations can help catalyze additional funders, and it can help organizations who have an earned revenue model like All Our Kin diversify their revenue sources. So I just want to offer that as a preface to the conversation on the two organizations, and I'll pause there if there are any initial reflections or questions.
Alexander, I want to thank you. I'm going to ask first if there's any questions from anyone else on from anyone on the committee.
We stop sharing so we can all see each other.
I did, Alexandra, have a question about a point that you made, which was, you know, you said something to the effect that enterprise capital is a means by which you help the organization so that the management time could be used to refocus on their mission. And I just wanted to just get a little elaboration on that in terms of how those two directly interact and that is accomplished.
I would use an analogy, and I've done this before in person, where if a for-profit venture-backed company is raising, say, a Series A, they're doing so to secure a level of runway so that they can focus on execution over a certain time period before they have to go back to market to raise additional funds. And that means that management is not having to simultaneously chase dollars and manage the business and think strategically ahead over a multi-year period. Nonprofits have to do the same thing, right? And so the time that leaders of All Our Kin or Freedom Reads spend chasing dollars is time that they're not spending in community. For example, there are 94 different correctional facilities in the state of Connecticut. And Freedom Reads, not just in Connecticut, but across the nation, wants to produce 200 libraries on an annual basis. If Dwayne Betts wants to go to the opening of those libraries in every correctional facility, that is 200 site visits that he has to do per year. And I think that's a good use of his time, right? He has lived experience. He can relate to the individuals who will benefit from these libraries. But there are 365 days in a year. So if he's going around chasing dollars and courting investors, that leaves less time for him to go to these correctional facilities and be in community with the people that he is trying to impact. And Andrea, I don't know if you want to add any anecdotes about your time as a nonprofit leader.
Lauren, such a great question. And I think that one of the things, I ran an organization for 15 years and it doubled in size twice. Prosperity Now, focused on racial wealth inequality and inequality nationally. And one of the key things that my board would always tell me to do is really focus on the external work of building the communities and the capacity to deliver rather than having to fundraise all the time. And which I did, because our business model was much more philanthropy because we did a lot of policy. And in my mind, one of the things that enterprise capital does is it just gives leaders the comfort to know that there's some financial security there and they can put their attention elsewhere. And I can give you many more examples, Lawrence. Doesn't mean they forget about it, because they do. They're ultimately responsible, right? But it is, and the other side I'd say is that as a chair of the board of several nonprofits nationally, is that when there's an opportunity and you want to seize the moment, having those resources enables you to do that and increases your impact pretty significantly.
Thank you so much. I will again ask if there are any other questions from any other committee members for Andrea or Alexandra.
Yeah, hi, Alexandra. Thanks for joining us last week. And Betty and the rest of the chief of staff, I can't thank you enough. It was an incredibly fulfilling and educational day. It was really remarkable. I can't stop talking about it. There were two very different organizations. But also, I just want to go back to the sort of the nine criteria. And you talked about, let's say, startup funding as an analog, if you will. It seems like we have two organizations that do two totally different things with at different points in their development. And I think you correctly point this out in the materials and analysis you provided to us, that I think we have one year of audited financials for Freedom Reads. It's only been in business for 3 years, and you point out there's a critical piece of, let's say, a 10-year financial plan that they need to put in place to, build up the ability to continue to grow to satisfy their at least their initial plans, whereas All Our Kin is in a very kind of different financial place. So I know you mentioned that they check not all nine boxes. It seems to be that some of those checks are a little different than other checks in the evolution. And I just want to, while both were extremely compelling in their missions, it just seems like we've got funding decisions, long-term funding decisions, with with one that's sort of starting out on its path, albeit very successfully, and one that it's gone down a path, also very successfully. And I just want to make sure my characterization of those is consistent with what you've presented, even though you did say they kind of check the boxes.
Yeah, I think it is consistent. Certainly when it comes to the box of audited financials, one organization has 3 years or more, and the other organization has 1 year, being 2022. They will have 2023 this year, but they have a longer track record than that because they were fiscally sponsored prior to 2022.
Right.
They have very different spending needs. So All Our Kin, as an organization that has expanded nationwide, or at least in multiple states, has, I think, an annual budget of somewhere around, it's multiple millions. So we might be talking about 10 plus million. I'd have to go back to the numbers. Whereas Freedom Reads is still growing. They have two initial funders that provided large commitments, particularly the Mellon Foundation. But if you look at the commitment that was made in 2022, that was an investment of over $5 million that went to the balance sheet. But their annual budget that year was $1.9 million. So net assets by the end of 2022 were $4.2 million. We think about what they did last year, I would imagine the budget was slightly over the $1.9 from the previous year. So they've already spent over half those funds, even though they are continuing to fundraise on top of what they initially secured. So their spending needs will be substantial if they're going to continue to scale at the pace that they imagine. And their ambition is quite high. That is, again, because there are well over 1,000 correctional facilities in this country, almost 100 in the state of Connecticut alone. And they're the only organization that are dedicated to building libraries for those facilities.
Steve, are you asking us? Oh, I'm sorry, Alexandra, go on.
I'm sorry. I guess what I'm getting at is one of the things that that you put as the sort of 10-year plan, and as an organization looking to invest long term, what are the and I know you listed, you know, half a dozen things we should look for, but like, what are the critical things if we're going to have a long term financial and maybe non-financial involvement with the organization? What are the critical things that we as a funder should look for to make sure those are in place and kind of grow?
I would say a financial model is really key. And they might already have one that wasn't part of the financial package that was provided, but we would certainly recommend that they develop a multi-year financial model so that they can answer some of these questions about what are their long-term spending needs. At the outset, they can produce X number of libraries on an annual basis. And I'm talking about Freedom Reads specifically, but this would also go for all our kin. At a certain point, they're going to need to expand their production facility, right? That would be storage space, delivery vehicles, equipment such as forklifts, other types of tools for manufacturing, et cetera. And they will have to expand their labor force. So tracking output with number of employees and the other ancillary services and systems that need to be in place is really critical. And that's something that can happen through the quarterly conversations that you're already having with these leaders. You should be able to track progress through annual financial statements, as well as quarterly internally produced financial statements. And what you want to make sure is that the net assets don't dip in a way that puts the organization at risk. You want to make sure that they are managing their liquidity. So they might have long-term funding, but if it's restricted, they might not be able to meet their short-term obligations because they can't actually spend that funding until the following year. So we have seven to nine financial indicators that we use to assess the financial health of organizations, and we recommend checking in on a quarterly basis just to make sure that all of those ratios are in balance.
Thank you.
So, you know, Alexandra, what I take away from the comment that your answer here is for board members, you know, in banking, and you see it also in many of the transactions that we do, you know, there are covenants or measures that are established that look at both either operating, operating strength or health or balance sheet liquidity and such things. And so, you know, I think that what I'm hearing here is that you're suggesting that, you know, for instance, in net asset tests and other things are key to us being able to judge on a ongoing basis, whether or not these organizations are meeting the growth that they are supposed to be doing. Am I correct?
I think that's a fair characterization.
Thanks.
Lawrence, if I could just add, you know, both Alexandra and I have a long-term deep relationship with the Yale School of Management, and there's all sorts mm-hmm. of supports we could find. In both cases, there's very competent CFOs, which is a huge, back to Steve's point about the variables that we looked at, but we can also have discussions with the organizations based on of what additional kind of assistance would be helpful so they can continue to manage their growth. I think it's an educational process for the leaders of organizations. We do this work because very few people go into social issues because they like finance. But at some point, really embracing it makes it much easier to do your work.
So I'm going to, at this point, thank you so much for that, Andrea. You know, just take a pause for a second and we'll get back to this discussion. Because I think that goes into, you know, what follows, what would be, you know, Betty's, staff memo review, which I wanted to just have her do. And then we can get back into the Q&A about the organizations and making a decision. Thank you. Betty?
Thanks, Lawrence. Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you to the members who were able to attend the site visit. Susan, we missed you. And it was an informative and interesting day on January 4th to visit two organizations that, although they're different, they have a lot of similarities. And the similarities are that they're both focused on impactful, equity-based programming, and that fits into our DEI focus, which is one of our core priority areas. They are looking, obviously, both to scale and grow their mission and their mission-driven strategic work. They're both in about a third of the state. So All Our Kin is in a third of the state. They're looking to scale statewide. And if you look at the number of prison libraries, they are currently in, they have 38 libraries in four of the 12 different correctional facilities in the state. And in order to scale statewide, there would be 90, around 95 libraries that would be in different dormitories within these correctional facilities. So both of them have a nationwide footprint as well. So All Our Kin is in 20 states right now, and Freedom Reads is in 10 states right now. Their goals are to increase their nationwide presence, but their CHIFA ask, $250,000 for All Our Kin and $750,000 for Freedom Reads. Of the $1 million that we have available for this targeted enterprise capital cycle, is they're really looking for the dollars to be able to scale to that statewide presence. So the dollars are just for their Connecticut presence, even though they have that dual track of the national presence. We are just talking about their Connecticut presence. So we've been talking about enterprise capital now for almost a year and a half. Thank you to Andrea first and Alexandra coming on board. Your work in Capitalize Good to be able to present this information to our board members. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the memo. The memo includes also the financial analyses from Capitalize Good that was attached in appendices 1 and 2 that were attached to the memo. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. So I'm going to open up Q&A, and we're going to take the two organizations in alphabetical order as we had visited them. And All Our Kin was the first one that we had met with. And what I would like to do is just to first ask for board committee members to provide, you know, their observations, if any, that they would like to share with the other committee members.
Lawrence,
anyone wants to volunteer?
Lawrence, you're asking for just general comments on both organizations. Is that just so I understand the question?
I would like to focus on All Our Kin first, and then we'll talk about
Kin.
Freedom very secondly.
Well, I'll just weigh in on All Our Kin. I was very impressed, very solid management team, impressive track record, critically important mission. You know, I came away very impressed and what's the right word? You know, just very impressed and enthusiastic about being part of the All Our Kin mission. Again, several people have drawn the analogy to venture-backed or startup financing. And to me, and going back to Alexandra's charts, I mean, those nine boxes. I mean, it's just a very, to me, a very solid organization, impressive people, good track record. They've done it. They've been around for a while. So I came away very impressed and really, you know, appreciative of Betty introducing the organization to the chief of grant committee. I enjoyed the presentation very much, but beyond enjoying it, it was something I think fulfills a critically important social need. So
Thank you, Peter. Anyone likes to offer their opinion or sort of their takeaway from all our kin?
Yeah, let me follow up where Peter left off with critically important social need. I found it just incredibly compelling how the founder saw this critically important social need that was a byproduct of the Tax Reform Act of 86. I don't know, it must have been later than that. At any rate, that upended the home or that upended the child care, the way child care was dealt with or structured or handled in the country. And the founder did something about it, and she's grown something into an institution that has an administration and specific goals and is expanding the structure, or has put in place our structure, I should say, to expand the services that her organization provides across the country. It seems like they portrayed a very clear plan, a very clear mission, a very clear, let's say, from a requester's perspective, use of funds to leverage. They even came up with an accreditation. Apparently, they came up with an accreditation standard system that was put in place into their industry. I mean, it's really fascinating what she's done, but she put in place the structure that's needed to grow the organization nationally. And it seems like all she needs is funds and people, as Alexander, I think, correctly stated at the outset. They're on a mission. And I think it's one of those places where I feel like we could contribute to the mission, but I also felt like, boy, if we didn't contribute, not that we wouldn't, that it would be so attractive to so many other organizations that could fund it because they put in place a structure that can show you how they plan to use their funds. It was very compelling.
So thank you, Steve. I will provide, sort of my observations and takeaway about All Our Kin. And they don't differ from what you heard from Steve and Peter so far, which is that it's an organization with 25 years of being able to put in place what I feel that, is needed for growth and sustainability is a platform and structure that they have in place. I look at their mission as one that is very important. It says that it's dealing with a critical issue in the state as well as the nation. But there are some challenges and some things that I also observed that I wanted to make sure that I shared with the committee. Representation in the room was different from that of, I don't know how that representation in the room matches the folks that are being serviced in terms of the people that they're reaching out and are working with. I think that's, something that I wanted to get a better understanding of how those two do connect and what that means. The other thing is that I, understood very critically that this is a bridge to state funding that they're looking to do in terms of moving past by getting into the eastern parts of the state and so forth, those regions that are not there, as a means to be able to solidify their their standing in the state to be able to go ahead and then draw state funding dollars, which is where everyone wants to go and everyone wants to be. So it's not a negative in terms of that. So I just wanted to make sure that from a sense of the committee that, you know, we understand that, that this is what that aim is. And so those were kind of some observations and, that I took away from all I can.
Okay.
So, you know, I guess I would ask the same of, and certainly, you know, in this dialogue and observation or commentary portion here, you know, certainly if you have, and we do have questions for Andrea or Alexandra, we can pose them as well. So, you know, let's talk about Freedom Reads.
Did you want to vote on All Our Kin now, or are we doing together at the end?
I would rather go ahead and take the vote at the end. I want to go and just have conversations and just hear.
Okay.
And then take it at the end.
Okay.
So anyone like to speak about Freedom Reads?
Go ahead, Freedom Steve. Freedom Reads was captivating. I mean, I got to tell you, I fell in love with this guy. I loved his mission. I loved his passion. I loved what he's created in a very short period of time. And it was really interesting. You know, look, he had his shtick down, if you will, as far as his presentation to us. He's a you know, very talented presenter. He's clearly done this before. The, you know, when we walked in, the, you know, the way he got us talking about books and the value that books had for those who didn't attend. When we walked in, there was one of his, you know, custom bookshelves for a prison unit, and it was filled with books. And he said, go over there and pick out a book. And we all gravitated to certain books, talked about how, you know, what the book meant to us, what our interaction with the book was. And there was a spontaneous, lively, positive, smiling, upbeat discussion around it. And his message was, hey, you saw the way you, a well-educated crowd, responded. Look at what this can do. Imagine what this can do for people who are discovering books and discovering this and have nothing else in their lives. And then, you know, took us on a tour that showed us how the books were made, how his essentially manufacturing process worked, and introduced us to the people along the way, nearly all of whom were formerly incarcerated people, who told us a little bit about what they did. It was a great sales process. And then he had a few of his staff on video. Everything was really professional. It was, as I mentioned before, when I was asking Alexander those questions, it was very much a startup, a super successful early startup, but a startup and very much founder focused. It was a little different focus from the, let's say, institution that All Our Kin was. Two different things, but it was very founder focused. And it was about his experience and what he did and so forth. And so it was an interesting, interesting that way. I felt like I was going in, you know, and talking to, it could have been a food and beverage startup or a tech startup. It was very much like that in my experience as a transactional lawyer, meeting with an early stage company. It was very much all about him, and he was filling it out with staff.
Anyone else?
Well, I'll weigh in, Lawrence. You know, I agree with everything Steve just said. I will put it out there, though, the thing that one of the reasons for me that's most compelling to invest or make a grant to Freedom Reads is the same thing that causes me a little bit of hesitancy. And that's the founder, Dwayne. I think he's an incredible storyteller. What he has done thus far is really impressive. Similar to All Our Kin, it serves a critical social need. And I give the guy all the credit in the world for what he's done thus far. I mean, it's simply fantastic. Having said that, I worry a little bit about the organization being perhaps a little bit overly dependent on one person. I know in one of Alexandra's slides, of those nine components, one of them was a strong CFO. And I recognize that Freedom Reads has a CFO, but one thing that I picked up on during the site visit, there was a question directed to the CFO woman on the screen, and she just began to answer the question, and Dwayne kind of jumped right in, kind of cut her off and finished answering the question, which isn't the end of the world for me, but it just made me wonder, you know, how empowered are those senior managers, and in this case, the CFO, and is the organization overly dependent on one person? And those are some of my thoughts, Lawrence. I think what he has done thus far is really incredible. And the population he serves, God bless him and more power to him. It's really impressive. So
you know, I'm going to jump in, Peter, and follow on your comments and share these takeaways that I and observations that I had. You know, I am with Steve in terms of this particular organization and the impact that it has, especially in the Black and Brown communities, is phenomenal because of the statistics that speak to the issues of the revolving door in terms of going in and out of jail. Yeah. And you know, the fact that and I will preface that comment, my next comment with this particular statement is that it is always well intended in most people's heart to go ahead and do something about it, but action does not always follow those intentions. And so what you tend to see is that you have situations, you know, they have been able to, and he has been successful, beyond success in terms of being able to draw and get the money that was needed to be able to kick this off, get funded and get to the position that he is today and to get into the four prisons that they are in and to be a nationwide entity being able to do so. I will also specifically share in just some experience I have, Peter, in terms of in a lot of young organizations, it is the charisma of the leader that helps that organization to get through the initial growth. It is the drive. And without that particular person at the helm, you don't get that, or that organization doesn't get to a point where, you know, leadership, as it matures, changes and becomes, much more stable and so forth. So, I thought that, he was impressive. I do think that they need to build out their infrastructure, the people and so forth. I thought that the CFO had, I listened to her response and she does have that background, but they need to build out further, the management team and so forth as they continue to grow. And I think that's where the critical help in terms of being able to do this comes with the dollars that, if we were to decide to give them money, it could be of great help. Any other comments? I'm interested in Mike Angelini's opinion.
Thanks, Lawrence. Appreciate it. I I would my comments would pretty much match everyone else's, but I was struck by Peter's comment in the all or kin discussion, and the use of the funds, the requested use of the funds, and in Peter's question wasn't so much about all or kin as it was just about this concept that we're discussing. And I think at first I think similarly uncomfortable about the concept of, well, if our dollars are just going to operating expenses, are we really making a long-term difference? And Andrea and Alexandra, I hear you say, that's helpful in kind of taking folks away from the need to raise funds, but and I see that. I'm not sure that that's what we're after here. I think we're after sort of opportunities to make sure that these entities are viable concerns, and that they're putting in place, that infrastructure that's going to keep them here for the long haul. And so I struggled with kind of that question as we met with both entities. But I mean, both entities are very valuable organizations and show a tremendous amount of promise. So certainly there's a desire to fund, but I guess I was looking for in both instances, what are those things that we can point to and say, the chief of dollars, I don't want to necessarily own any, I don't want chief to own anything per se, or be able to say we did that, but to be able to feel better about contributing to the longstanding going concern of the organization, I think it's going to be something that we're going to need to want to make sure that we're comfortable with. And I think I saw a little bit of that with the Freedom Reads discussion, in that they pointed to in one of their slides the fact that they are going to focus on developing this metric, this analysis work that they're going to do with Yale University, to measure the success, of the insertion of these libraries in various prisons. And I thought that those were the sorts of things that we should be, even if the dollars are going to be used for what we would consider operating, that we should see some milestones or some commitments to outgrowths that we do think will make a difference, because I think putting these libraries into all of Connecticut's or as many Connecticut prisons as possible is a really important thing. I think we have to be assured that it's going to make a difference. And then on top of that, because there is going to be a need for funding in the future. And so if they're not making a difference, if we can't display or evidence the fact that they're making a difference, who will contribute that next $750,000? So I was really encouraged by both entities. I think they're doing extraordinary work, and I would love to fund them, as much as we can. But I also feel like we need to understand that there are going to be things that are going to be advanced with those organizations' infrastructures or capabilities. Sorry, Lawrence, that's probably more than you wanted.
Mike, just to
No,
clarify, and
no.
I apologize, I wasn't able to go. We had our own board meeting that day, but so to see that, if we fund whoever we fund, is do you measure that success by a stronger balance sheet next year than this year?
I don't know that, but that's all. That could certainly be. I agree. That could certainly be, one potential outcome. But I think in both cases, we shouldn't expect to see that from our contributions. Betty, am I right on that? I mean,
Right.
in large, I don't think anyone was using this for balance sheet fortification.
No, they're not.
I would go ahead and agree with you, Mike, that the idea here is it's not about necessarily revenue growth and or increased balance sheet. This is really about trying to help them to get to that. In the case of All Our Kin, is to be able to get to get those folks that they need trained in the regions that are needing of the trainers to be able to you know, as I said, speak to and go back to the state of Connecticut to say, hey, you know, we have this outreach and so forth, and we want to be able to then get more long-term permanent funding in place that will sustain the organization and sustain what we're doing. Because if they do get that, that ultimately is the win, right? In the case of Freedom Reads, you know, they're looking to go ahead and get into the prisons and to continue to go ahead and anchor themselves vis-a-vis you know, Connecticut to continue the national march that they're doing in terms of being a organization looked upon by other states and for the results that can be measured. Now, you know, how do you measure the outcome in terms of what Freedom Lead brings and so forth? You know, it would certainly have to deal with long-term studies and so forth. You can look at recidivism and see whether or not that, you know, decreases as a result of the impact of this, you know, Black Braids. It may or may not. I don't know the particular answer, but I do think that in the short term or near term, you should be able to look at them, because from my perspective, they're always going to need liquidity on their balance sheet to attract more funding. And so if they can grow their liquidity over some time, grow their equity in their balance sheet, I think that ultimately is going to, because, you know, it's a tough subject matter.
But I didn't get the impression that that's what they're doing here, Lawrence. It didn't sound maybe I misunderstood, but I think the plan was to spend the funds.
Yeah, that's I understand. Yeah. This is sort of like ramp the manufacturing business, essentially.
Yeah. It's a growth capital. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Growth capital.
I would just offer it's not an either or, in that enhancing the financial strength and having the capital available to invest in production capacity we hypothesize that it will improve impact outcomes, because they'll be able to produce more libraries and deliver those to more correctional facilities across the state of Connecticut. And by having that enhanced production capacity, they can continue to demonstrate and work with Yale University to develop impact metrics, which can then be used to show prospective funders that their solution and intervention is viable and has a huge positive impact on incarcerated individuals.
Plus, I would add that the U.S. Department of Justice has had a multi-decade research initiative that started with the work in social impact bonds to look not just at recidivism, but at a whole set of metrics in terms of how prisons are organized and how inmates are treated. So there's all sorts of other institutions that have been looking at this for a long time, that the value of having a CEO like Dwayne is that kind of data can be accessed as well, Mike. So it's not like they have to invent it, because it's been done in many places and funded very generously at DOJ.
Any other questions?
What data? I'm sorry, I wasn't following that.
Andrea? Oh,
you're on mute, sorry.
Yeah. The Department of Justice has had a multi-year research initiative on this very topic that you are looking at, right? What are the interventions in prisons that actually change recidivism and create different outcomes? So I'm just saying that there's a host of kind of literature and research on the topic as well that I'm sure they're aware of, that in addition to their own research, we can draw upon.
Yeah, sorry. So please don't misunderstand me. I don't think it's a question of, I mean, I'm 100%. I'm actually on a literacy organization board here in New Haven, so I'm completely in support of the concept of what Duane and the organization is trying to do. I guess I'm trying to, I guess, cross that bridge of feeling better about, you know, our dollars just going to a very important part of the business, but going toward, you know, sort of what we would consider operational expenses. And trying to come to conclusion that that's okay. I mean, that's, even though what we're trying to do is something, you know, organization changing, going towards something like operational expenses is important because it does offer some advantages, but right. I think we need to get to conclusion of what those advantages are and feel comfortable with them. And in some cases, I think they're measurable. And, you know, that's when I brought up at the end, in one of the last slides that Duane shared, was the fact that one of the outcomes of this $750,000 is they are working on this measurement capacity with Yale University. And I think that's valuable. I think for us, I think that's a very different thing than saying $750,000 went to providing 30 libraries. I think saying $750,000 went to providing libraries, one-time libraries, but also went to this, you know, this effective measurement tool that will, you know, garner funding in the future. I think that's a very different statement.
Yeah.
Sorry,
can
Peter.
Can I just talk about that measurement tool in a different way? So one of the things that's interesting about this type, the way we're looking at this funding, and I think Alexandra brought this up in her introduction, and it's in the materials, is the sort of no restrictions or sort of no strings attached. We want to invest in them and grow them. But are there certain things, not restrictions, but guidance that we and our expertise and other things can share to invest to make sure, whether it's the sort of the measurement, to make sure that the measurement occurs and we see that investment of our funds in the measurement tool or in other aspects of whether it's All Our Kin or Freedom Reads and the way the business invests it. And I'm not suggesting that there's a sort of a direct corollary, but if this were an early stage company, I would expect a big investor to have a board seat to provide expertise to that early stage company in a certain area. There may not be an appropriate analog for an organization like ourselves, but are there things that we can do to leverage what Shifa brings or our board brings or other things with these organizations like an early stage company? Have you seen that before, Alexandra? Is that, or Andrea,
yeah,
is that we should consider, and how should we consider?
Go, and Alexandra actually raised this a little bit, Steve, but go ahead, Alexandra.
Well, absolutely. And I, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a formal board seat. I'm not sure if that's a role that you even want to take on, but you can provide guidance on technical assistance. And we have some recommendations about financial technical assistance. You're already engaging with these organizations or existing grantees on a quarterly basis and helping to develop impact metrics to understand the use and impact of Shifa's funds. So that will remain consistent. The only thing that we're adding on top of that are these financial metrics to understand the financial health and stability of the organization throughout the year. The other thing that you can do as a funder is make connections to other funders that might be interested and for whom these organizations fit within their impact themes, because these are growing organizations that will require ongoing support, whether it's general operating support or additional enterprise capital. Andrea, did you want to add? Because I kind of cut you off.
No, I thought you were exactly right. I mean, see, the other thing we recommend, and I think that's already been done in this case, is that organizations and funders create joint metrics that are meaningful to both sides, and get away from the reverse engineering of, oh, Foundation XYZ only cares about these things. The organization doesn't really do that work, but they have to contort themselves to do it. In this case, it is what matters to Shifa, and then what matters to All Our Kin or Freedom Reads, and come up with that joint understanding, which we're pretty close to already. And we can see, as this Yale research evolves, how we add on to that.
One very simple thing that you can do is you already have the stated uses of the funds. You have their budget and how they plan to spend the money. You get their P&L on a quarterly, semi-annual, or annual basis. You can see how the funds were actually spent. And yes, funding is, or cash is fungible, so you don't necessarily know what were your dollars versus someone else's, but you can at least see the impact of the funds on the organization and what they were able to do with the enterprise capital that Shiva provided.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? So, given the time, I think that, you know, we should take a vote on the request. And I will start with Arlar Kim is requesting $250,000 as funding. And is there a motion to go ahead and provide the $250K for Arlar Kim?
So I'll make a motion.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Yeah. Okay. Any comments, questions?
Can I just raise an overall issue? So
sure.
I feel, and this goes to both organizations, I feel like the 250 and the 750 are both arbitrary amounts. And I look at them as, I look at us as making a long-term investment in these organizations. And while we have, I understand, roughly $1 million that we're looking to allocate here, and obviously 250 and 750 fit into that, would it make sense to take the funding and make the funding applicable over multiple years as a long-term investment as opposed to making it upfront? And would it make sense to have, like, I don't know, more kind of symmetry instead of 250 for one, 750 for the other? You know, we essentially contribute a similar amount for each organization, regardless of the size of the ask that each have made, only because they both seem like arbitrary numbers. You know, to do something, you know, a large amount up front and then a declining amount over 3 years or something like that, as they grow or as we see them grow, or maybe over 2 years. I think it's sort of a philosophical discussion. Maybe I should have raised it earlier.
Yeah, no, I think go ahead, Peter.
No, I think it is somewhat philosophical, but I think it also has a very practical side too, and a practical implication. And while the motion that's out there is regard to all our kin, when the discussion goes to Freedom Reads, I support 100% what you just said with regard to Steve, what Steve just said with regard to, you know, getting it more in line with where we are with the other grant, in this case, all our kin, and then perhaps looking at staging over a couple of years. You know, some of my comments are more, I think, more appropriate to Freedom Reads, but I just wanted to agree with what Steve just said with regard to his comment. It is somewhat philosophical, but there are practical implications for our decisions today.
But maybe I'm confused and I wasn't there, but I kind of thought this was the point of it. And what we just heard is that you're trying to make a commitment so that they know what they have and they can plan for it and use that and not spend their time meeting the metrics that we put in place to say you're going to get a next year's allotment. I wasn't there, so maybe I'm asking redundant questions.
No, I think in theory, you're absolutely right, Susan. But I think, and I don't want to speak for anyone else other than myself, but I think with regard to the large ask for Freedom Reads, I think what you're hearing is a little bit of hesitancy in coming out of the box initially with that size of a grant. But in theory, I think what your understanding of enterprise capital is, you're right on the mark. You got it.
Yeah, and maybe, and so Peter hit on something, and maybe, I don't know if Betty or Jeanette want to comment on this sort of historically. I feel like in the brief time that I've been on the committee, you know, we're, our a big ask would be 100,000, and we've dealt with plenty of, you know, 20 and 30,000 ones. And I understand that was sort of our traditional business model, and we're looking at this in a different way. So I look at 750 as a big ask, and I'm trying to think about, all right, for our organization, it seems like that's a lopsided sum. And it might, that organization might consider it an appropriate ask, but, you know, based on what we've done in the past, is there a way that we can, I don't know, reconcile that with, you know, as we kind of go in a new direction with our contributions?
So if I could address some of the points, Steve, first is that as far as the, I want to address the asks. So that was what they requested. So it was 250 for all our kin. For Freedom Reads, they actually said in order to scale statewide that they would need, that would be 2.5 million. For this cycle, we have available one, you know, that's what is available for this cycle is 1 million. For our targeted grants over the years have been everywhere from $500,000 down to about $100,000. The targeted grants are six-figure grants. The health equity grants that we made in the most recent cycle a year ago, there were a couple of them that received 250,000, and there were several that received in the 100 to 150,000 range. So the targeted grants are meant to be grants that are larger and that are meeting a statewide need. And as far as enterprise capital goes, it really is looked at in a different way than a grant. This is not a grant. Okay, so this is meant to be enterprise capital, which is to support their net assets and to provide them with the funding that they need based on what their funding is. We have provided in the past to organizations a time frame for that they can utilize the funds up to 24 months. So we let them make that decision, and that once again, the points that Alexandra was making about the difference in enterprise capital than a grant. Okay, so this is not meant to be a grant.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeanette.
I was just going to say historical perspective in terms of the size of grants that we've ever given out. To my understanding, I don't think we have ever done a grant for $750,000, although going back to, you know, the 90s or, you know, a couple decades ago, there may have been some state mandated funding for the Science Center that was state mandated. That may have exceeded that amount. But to my knowledge, since the grant program and the grant committee has been making its own decisions about awards, I don't think we've done $750,000. I think 500 has been the most.
So I just wanted to add, you know, based on, I think Susan's point was a very good point to make, and Betty just reiterated this, is that, you know, I don't disagree with Steve or Peter's thought in terms of, you know, if you want to stage, but this is not a grant. It's a grant. It's enterprise capital versus the normal way that you make a grant. So if we are to make a decision today as to what we're going to give, we do not have to give what is the amount that's requested, but whatever decision that we make should be an amount that we are going to give to them. And if you want to stage that over 2 years, it is still going to be an amount that we're going to give to them over those 2 years, rather than just saying that, you know, it's going to, there are measurements and other things, you know, We are going to get those measurements as a part of just working with these organizations. But I think to in the spirit of being enterprise capital, we need to come to a total amount, whether you want to give it all at once or, you know, put it over 2 years. Maybe that's an approach that we can take into consideration. Any thoughts on that?
Lawrence, just to pipe in on the utilization, the time frame utilization, we give the money with our grants in the past. We give them the money up front, and then they can utilize it over 2 years. Okay. So it's not given out in installments.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. That helps. Thank you, Betty. So I guess, you know, the decision then is that we need to come to a decision as to what is a total amount that we are willing to give to the organizations would be my take on enterprise capital.
Well, Lawrence, just so I'm clear on process here. So are we, there was a motion made and seconded with regard to all our kin. So are we trying to reach a decision on all our kin or both of them together? I just want to make sure.
So we're just going to do all our kin right now and finish up the vote. But there was a discussion, and the discussion led to here. So, you know, there was a motion to provide 250. It was second. And, you know, so I'm going to, after the comments asked for a vote, a final vote on providing the 250K requested by all our kin. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Votes unanimous. Okay. There is a request for 750K in terms of support for Freedom Reads. Is there a motion to go in for the 750K or a motion for another amount?
Sure, I'll make the motion for 750K.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Susan. Any discussions?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, for in the spirit of time, I mean, given all the foregoing with regard to some of the questions and concerns on Freedom Reads, I would be much more comfortable with a much different size award. I know we're not supposed to call it a grant, so we'll call it an award. You know, for me, there are some questions about management. There's questions about management depth. There's questions about track record. Having said that, I think they have a fantastic mission, and it's critically important. And I give Dwayne all the credit in the world for starting it and doing what he's done with the resources he's had thus far. But for the reasons I just articulated, as well as Chifa's history in terms of level of grant or award making, I would not be support. I couldn't vote for a $750,000 award to Freedom Reads.
Peter, is there another amount that you would suggest?
Peter, what
you know,
Sorry for interrupting. Peter, what if it were staged over 2 years? So they know that the money will be there.
Because we already decided it's a commitment. Whatever we decide, there's no taking it back or withholding.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate the trying to find a creative solution to, I guess it's my dilemma, but to me, 750 over 2 years is still 750. And I don't know if we want to do some sort of benchmark funding over 3 years or some sort of abridged small reapplication. I realize that's not perhaps the spirit and the intent of enterprise capital. But to me, I would be much more comfortable as a board member and as a fiduciary with a $250,000 grant. And whether it's benchmarking, and we revisit it in a year for 500 and then another year for 750, or they reapply. But I have, I don't want to be redundant, but I have some significant concerns about that large of a grant for this particular organization.
Thank you, Peter. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Lawrence, thank you. I have concerns about the size of the grant, just historically. I mean, it's a big nut for us to swallow. I mean, Betty did mention, you know, originally they said to fulfill their mission, they need $2.5 million. So this is a material but small portion of that. Also, you know, if you look at 750, the way I'm sort of starting to rationalize the size of the grant, 750, using their number on the all-in cost per library of 25,000, you get about 30 libraries when they want to do, you know, 200. So we're, you know, there's still a significant unmet need. Did I do that math?
Just to clarify, they have 38 libraries in Connecticut. The 750 would add an additional 30, and they have a need for 92, I believe, or 94 for the state. Mm-hmm. That would cover the entire state, but not 200.
Okay. And then just one other thing I want to point out that was in the memo is they do, you know, their original startup funding was $5 million from the Mellon Foundation. They subsequently, I think in the past 6 months, but maybe I'm wrong, got an additional $10 million from the Mellon Foundation. So I think our funding is critically important in part to set the example that as a state entity, we're supporting this, but they're not totally reliant on solely our funding in order to scale it to the level that they want to scale. But I think it is critically important that we provide, you know, some funding to this organization.
So hearing all of this, there was a vote for 750, and that was second. Would a $500,000 commitment sound better, Peter, from your perspective?
Certainly headed in the right direction. Yes, it does. Thank you for that, Lawrence. It does. But it's not just about the dollars. It is about, I guess, some of the same concerns that, you know, I and a few others have articulated with regard to management and organization. And, you know, I'm more comfortable with a smaller award, but those concerns don't go away because we've gone from 750 to 500. You know, I'd like to think that, you know, the observation was made a few minutes ago that their original ask or their need was over $2 million. And I guess, you know, unfortunately, the way my thinking is, if that was the case, then to me, that's all the more reason to go for a smaller amount rather than a larger one, because it's, you know, we're not going to meet their need. If their need was 2.25 or whatever the number was, if we're not going to meet that need, then I would prefer to back it off even more and then put in some sort of potentially staged financing. I don't want to be overly redundant, and I know we're running out of time, but given CHIFA's history, given the size of our grant pool, and my reservations, I would be uncomfortable with 500. I appreciate you going in that direction, Lawrence. But that's kind of where I come out.
Okay. So a vote was asked and supported and seconded for 750. I will make a motion, or actually we need a final vote in terms of that. So I guess I am the deciding vote here, right? you know, Peter is very clear that he does not want to do 750. I will make a comment that, you know, before I give my vote, that initially coming out of this, I looked at the 750 as a tall ask, and I hear the issues about, you know, Chief and where our commitment has been, and $2.5 million that they need versus the 750 that they're requesting of us. I am split between the two of those, and I would make a counter recommendation to the committee of a $350,000 or $400,000 support that you know, wanted to hear if Susan and Steve were in favor, or you know, as a counteroffer in terms of a vote.
When you say 350 or 400, you mean per
Which
year?
yeah, or well, it's not per year because, you know, I would think that that's a total commitment.
So a total, instead of Peter's suggestion of 500, a total commitment of 350 or four. I mean, I'd certainly support a commitment of 400. I'd support a commitment of 500. I wonder, you know, what we can do to deal with our concerns about the fact that there's a great founder story, but there's so much that's reliant on the founder. I think that's a discussion maybe that's a for another day. Sorry, Susan, I don't want still too
So
much.
I was going to say I can support it. I would support even the larger number as I made the motion. I will say I think in this case, because it's a matter of scaling, so if they don't have all the money, it's even if they don't have the 2.2 million, we don't know, you know, where they're at, but it's scaling. It's not like they're going to fail. They're just not going to open as many libraries as quickly, probably. The other thing I would say, working for a not-for-profit that gets a lot of grants, it's very difficult to get a good caliber person to take a grant-funded position because when the money goes away, they don't have a job. And many people don't want that. So having the kind of enterprise capital philosophy where they've got the money in the bank, when somebody's looking to take the job, they're going to see that it's a stronger organization. They're going to feel like, yeah, they can be around for a while and collect their paycheck. I think that might help them actually help the organization even be more successful. Just a different school of thought.
That's a good point.
Lawrence, would you support the 500 instead of the 354?
I will support the 400. So, you know, the vote, I guess, is it's Peter. What is your vote on 400,000?
Lawrence, if I could just ask Steve to make a motion to amend his motion to change it
Sure.
to the whatever figure you're agreeing on for 350, and then vote on that. Have a second and then a vote.
Okay,
Okay.
so Steve, I'm making an amendment.
After I want Lawrence and Peter to have that, and then I'll discussion, then I'll do that.
Okay, thanks.
So, Lawrence, what was your question? You're asking if I could support a $400,000 grant to Freedom Reads?
Correct.
You know, if that's the sentiment of the committee, I'll support it. It's yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, Lawrence. I'm much more comfortable with 250. But if the sentiment of the committee is 400, I will support it.
Thank you. So, Steve, if you can make your amendment.
Yeah, I'd like to make an amendment to my motion to support to change the amount of the what are we calling it? Of the allocation from
It's a capital enterprise capital grant is, I think, the
okay
correct term.
amount Okay, thank you. Of the amount of the enterprise capital grant from $750,000 to $400,000 for Freedom Reads.
Thank you. Is there a second? I will second that. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed?
What do we do with the excess capital that we have allocated?
I don't know what we do with that capital.
Targeted program did, you know, we had allocated $1 million. If we don't spend $1 million, we can at a later date decide we're going to put it into one of the other grant programs or roll it into something, you know, have it available for another program, another CHIFA product, or roll it into next year's grant program. So those would be the options. The board could take that up, you know, at a future meeting.
Yeah, thank you. So I want to thank everyone for their time. We ran over, so I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
Make that motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Susan. Second.
Second.
Over. Aye.
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 Thank you.
See everyone.